stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by two millennials who work here at Zacks in Chicago. Zacks editor Ryan McQueeney, who you might have heard on the Friday Finish Line podcast with Maddie Johnson. It goes every week. And also, here's another one. What's that new tech one?
Tech Talk Tuesday.
Tech Talk Tuesday. So you might want to check that one out. And we're also joined by Parth Panchal. He's a Zacks intern. We have a couple of college interns here in the office, and he's one of them. He's actually a finance and information systems major at Loyola of Chicago. So welcome, Parth.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you
for
having me.
This is his debut on this show, so that's fun. But I asked them both to come in because they're both millennials, and I was trying to corral some millennials here in the office, and they were chosen to talk about investing and whether or not, you know, millennials are investing in stocks or ETFs or either or both. Or nothing, and you know where millennials are putting their money in the stock market, or if they even are. I've said before when we've done millennial podcasts that I'm a Generation Xer, and it was my generation who like first experienced the revolution in investing.
Sure.
Because prior in the 90s, you literally had to have a Payne Webber account or something like a Morgan Stanley or one of those. You could only trade in blocks of 100. So you would call up your broker and say, I want to buy 100 shares of Walmart. And that was it. You couldn't buy like 10 or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And you paid $100 per transaction. So you really weren't going out there and doing this often. Then we were buying mutual funds. So there was that. But then in the late 90s, a lot of things changed because E-Trade was invented and then online trading came into vogue. And Generation X was kind of the first generation who was exposed to all of that and cheaper trading, ease of trading. We didn't call anybody. We could just trade from our desktops back then. And then we had the dot-com boom. And so Generation X people were trading like out of their dorm rooms. And then there was the day trading thing and like all this was going on. Then we got some busts. We had the dot-com bust and then we had the Great Recession. And then the millennials took over as, you know, being in college and getting their first jobs and all of that. So I'm just kind of curious to know, do they trade in their college dorm room still? Parth, you're like nodding.
Yeah, they do. So it really depends on the college student and depending on how active they are in keeping up with financial news. So I've noticed that a lot of my colleagues in college, they love equities if they do trade. Just because it's exciting, it's a little more easy to understand than fixed income. So some of my friends have like Schwab accounts. I have an account with TradeKing. It all depends on the commissions and whatnot. But the most active thing I've seen is accounts with like Robinhood and Acorns.
That's the big thing I wanted to mention. As you were saying, people out of their dorm rooms, back in the day when E-Trade first was invented, it's gotten even quicker and easier and cheaper than that. And so, yeah, I think if anything that has inspired the kind of new wave of dorm room investing, it has been Robinhood and these other mobile applications that are allowing you to trade for free, basically.
They
got to make money somehow, so they charge for certain types of trades. But for the most part, the things that millennials would be interested in, domestically listed stocks, you get to trade them for free. So, and it's a mobile application on your phone. It's really easy.
So. Right. So are people trading like on the bus now and things like that? They're on the subway and they're buying, like millennials buying that way?
Yeah. Not to sound like creepy guy who looks at people's phones on on public transportation, but you do. Yeah. You see people, I have Robinhood, so I know what the interface looks like. And I have seen people, checking their portfolios real quick on the commute into work and whatnot. And
wow.
Yeah. It's a whole new thing.
But
So Robinhood is like a thing. It sounds like it's really popular with millennials. Okay.
And the biggest thing with Robinhood is no commissions. You can trade for free, basically. They have like a lockup period. If you sell or buy a stock, they hold your money for 3 days. I'm not really sure how they make money.
The certain types of international trades.
And is
like,
it?
There are certain things you can buy that they do charge you a fee on. I don't have a ton of money in my account, so I don't know if they hit like a max where they start charging you if you're throwing around a ton of money. But
can you trade any amount? Like if I just had $100, could I?
Yeah.
You can buy one share of whatever.
That's another part of the appeal to it, I think, too, is they don't have a minimum for your account.
Okay.
What I've noticed is with the Robinhood users, they know less about the markets, if that kind of makes sense. So they don't really understand liquidity that comes in. They're probably getting the higher end of the bid-ask spread and whatnot. So there are kids in college who trade, like we were saying, but there are different levels of them, as I was mentioning. So the ones who use Robinhood are the ones that kind of want to dabble and feel like they're an active investor, but then they're the more serious traders in college who have TradeKing accounts, who have Schwab accounts, who know a little bit more about the markets and how to kind of control them and go around them.
So it doesn't sound like they're scared to be in the market.
No, not at all. So one question that we had on here was, are millennials afraid from 2008, 2009? Yeah. And honestly, sadly, it's more of a historical event because I'm 21.
Right. You're young still.
Yeah. I'm 21 and I was 13, 14 years old when the Great Recession happened. So I don't really have an emotional connection with it. It's really more of a case study on what was going on. And it's more something that we're actually learning about in our classrooms, what to avoid and how we can learn from what happened during the Great Recession.
Yeah, I would actually disagree with that to an extent. I would agree definitely that it's not necessarily something that is keeping people out of the market today. I think the interesting thing, and what is often a critique about millennials, is we as a generation tend to be, our attention span and our focus is relatively short.
Right.
And so right now, in the United States at least, we're feeling relative strength in the economy. And that is bringing a confidence to start getting interested in these types of things. I will say, though, that, right around the same age when the Great Recession happened, I think is one of many things that has happened during a time period where millennials were old enough to understand what was going on that has created an overall distrust of the air quotes like system, if
right.
you will.
The elders.
Yeah. Oftentimes there's no better way to articulate it than that. But I would say, if anything, there's definitely a bit of a distrust for large corporations, a distrust for Wall Street banks, a distrust for the government's ability to protect us from those types of things. Because at 13 or 14 years old, it might not be directly impacting you. You definitely don't have a job or anything.
Right.
You're not necessarily bringing in income, but you are old enough to be watching the news and paying attention to how bad it was. And for a lot of people, it was really, really bad
right.
in 2008 and onward. And so I think that has created an underlying kind of sense of distrust or hesitation. But right now, the economy is doing well. And I think as people are getting into the workforce, there's a lot of opportunities right now and people feel comfortable with that. So,
what about the complaint that the millennials have no money? You know, you're all living in your parents' basements once you get out of school. And then, you have huge student loans, you have no money to put into either house or the stock market. Well, it sounds like you're finding some money to trade stocks.
Yeah, it's interesting because the student loan thing is, it really can't be understated at all.
Right.
Kids these days are graduating with tens of thousands of dollars of debt, a debt from college, which they felt kind of forced to do. You're put on a track at a very young age of you're going to go here, here, and here, and then you're going to apply to college, and you're going to go get a degree, and then you're going to get a job. And that's been the norm in middle-class America and upwards for a long time now. But it's only just now recently that that track then puts you in tens of thousands of dollars of debt
right.
at a very young age. So.
The traditional, like Ryan said, the traditional experience is go to college, get good grades, graduate, right?
Make your parents proud.
Exactly, right. Get that 4.0, whatever you need to do. But today, from my experience, to have that real competitive edge and competitive advantage to get to big banks coming from a middle market school, it's all about industry experience. And that's why I really trade. So I've saved up money from the past, really threw everything into my TradeKing account to get that firsthand industry financial experience of what I want to do in the future, if that makes sense.
Okay. So, obviously we're talking to both of you who want to work in finance or are working in finance now. What about like the history major or something like that? Do you have any friends who are just kind of like regular, they're going to be teachers or something like that? Are they interested in stocks?
I've met one guy.
One guy.
Yeah, I have one friend who's a philosophy major and the stock market really interests him. But like I said, he has a Robinhood account and he owns like one or two shares of whatever company because, it's exciting for him.
Yeah.
And he feels like he's involved.
Yeah, okay. I will say one thing that is pretty true of the human experience, regardless of when you were born. people like to make money and they like having their money that they already made become more money. Obviously, investing in stocks are an option to make that a reality. The opposite is obviously a reality when you do that as well. But so I think that means, to answer your question, there's always going to be some people who aren't always interested in finance who want to be learning about stocks and investing in stocks because they like making money. But
nobody, you're not seeing like this big rush of non-finance majors getting on Robinhood and investing, because that is what happened in 1999. Literally, like, my grandma was getting the account and she was like day trading stocks and stuff, and she'd never done anything before in her life. So you're not seeing anything like that.
Not at all, from what I've seen.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if anything that I could compare it to, then the kind of turn of the century there is, I would think that the earliest days of the dot-com boom might be similar to what we're seeing right now with the interest in marijuana stocks.
Right.
If I've discussed anything with people who are not traditional finance people, it's, hey, I heard about this like weed ETF.
No, what is it with those? Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's definitely, I mean, there's probably a lot more hurdles that the marijuana industry has to overcome than the early days of the dot-com boom.
For sure.
So it's a completely different demon, but people like to talk about that. It's one of the, once people find out what I do and write about on a daily basis, that's one of the early comments normally.
So yeah, let's talk about that. So they're into the pot stocks, but there really aren't any. There's a few, but not really.
Yeah, everybody is though right now. I don't even know if that's a generational thing.
No,
I think that's just
not.
So people think that that's
it's all ages.
We're on the cusp of that being a little bit bigger of a deal than it is right now, and people like to be in on those things early. So
what else I've seen is that kids like to buy, like college students, millennials like to buy stocks for companies which they shop at.
That was my next question.
Which is a representative bias, and they don't really understand that just because a company you like to shop at has nice products doesn't mean they're an investable company.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's true.
Right.
But they're buying what they know. That's
exactly.
Like an old investment philosophy from Peter Lynch in the 1980s. He would like go shopping at the mall and see some hot store, or he actually got his hair cut at like a hair cuttery or something like that and decided like, I wonder if, you know, these guys are making money. And then he would investigate it at least and then look at the financials. And then he made all this money buying what he knew.
Right. Like the biggest thing lately has been Snapchat, right?
Yeah.
Snapchat.
Right. Well, that was the question I did have. Are you guys buying Snapchat IPO, like those kinds of stocks?
Yeah. So personally, I do not own any Snap right now, because it's not a stock that makes me feel comfortable from a more critical perspective of how the company is making money and their growth potential. However, I will say that the Snap IPO was by far the thing that I talked about the most at work that I then brought into my social circle. My close friends, people that I live with and whatnot, know obviously what my job is.
Yeah.
And that was one of the few things that has come up in the past year or so that has been no bias. Everybody wants to talk about it. Everyone's was interested in hearing about the Snapchat IPO.
Are they buying it though after they talk with you?
Probably not if they talk to me, but because I'm a little bit hesitant on it myself. But it was kind of interesting to see the difference between the people, like you said, who are buying things only because they use them,
right,
and are familiar with them and interact with them, versus the people who are buying things and are the exact opposite. We're coming from the older generation who are not interacting with that thing at all. So in the case of Snapchat, I mean, it's a 16 to 25 year old age group is what they're targeting. They're very open and honest about the fact that they're targeting that. That's clearly who the core demographic is. So it was kind of funny to read, you know, as someone who's been using Snapchat from its earliest inception before Snapchat stories were even a thing. I remember the day Snapchat stories launched and we were like, oh my God, this is way cooler now. It was interesting to me to read a lot of commentary from people who were not in that core demographic,
the older
trying
people.
To tell me what's wrong with the Snapchat right. user interface. And I was like, okay, we definitely have some points to make about the fact that the company's not making any money right now and the fact that there's plenty of competitors that are quickly copying the right. interface. Those are all issues, of course. But I was like, I actually think I know quite a bit about yeah. About how Snapchat works and how it feels to use. So, yeah, that was interesting.
What about a stock like Facebook then? Because its average age user is a lot older, actually. It's somewhere in the 30s. So most millennials, even the oldest millennial, I think, is like 32 years old now. So most millennials would not be the target of Facebook. But I saw some lists that TD Ameritrade put out about what millennials own in their stock portfolios and what they're trading. And apparently Facebook is one of the more popular names. Is that because of Instagram or other features that they also have?
I would say familiarity.
Okay.
Facebook is a huge name, obviously, and it's relatively a stable name to put your dollar in. And since, you know, I've had Facebook since I was in actually 8th grade when it first came
wow.
out back in the day. So I'm very familiar with it. I've been using it for years now.
Mm-hmm. Does that drive you to buy the stock too?
I wouldn't say me personally, but I would say other millennial investors, yes.
Okay.
That's a more unique one too, where it's something that millennials have used and grown up with almost,
right.
I would say. And for some people, watched wannabe Facebooks not turn out so well. I remember back in the day when I was juggling in middle school, my Facebook and my MySpace account.
Yeah.
And now we're only talking about one of those two platforms.
Right.
But that one has been, in both the short and long term, a more unique story because it's one that you could have bought simply because you're familiar with it and then also benefited from the fact that it's had pretty consistent growth over the years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, going on that same vein, what about Google? On these same lists of companies that millennial owned, Google is not on the top 10. And obviously, man, Google might not be that interesting, except for YouTube side. And the millennials, you definitely have grown up using YouTube, maybe more than anybody else. And so I was kind of surprised to see that it wasn't in the top 10. Is there a reason for that? Or is it just not exciting enough? Or
I think it's because you don't get a tangible product from Google. You know, millennials like to have things in their hands, you know, like I was saying before. So they, let's say H&M, right? They shop at H&M a lot. If there's H&M stock out there, they'd love to buy it because they like their products. Google is a great service and we all use them, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And you're also then getting into, it becomes a little bit more complex than for people to piece together like how the company makes money, even if
right.
it, you know, to us with an understanding of the company.
So most of the millennials aren't equating YouTube with Google. They don't even maybe understand that it's owned by Google.
Yeah. I would say that if you polled millennials as a whole, I'm not sure the generation would be totally on top of the whole alphabet thing over the past year or so.
Yeah, I don't even call it Alphabet.
Yeah,
I still call it Google.
Yeah, that might have flown over a few people's heads, that's for sure.
A thing that I've also seen is millennials love speculative opportunities. They like volatility. It's exciting. They want to see movement. Like, my friends know that I trade, so they'll ask me my opinion about biotech, pharma, emerging markets. They want to see big movers, either on the upside or downside.
Yeah.
Okay, so is that why Tesla apparently is popular too? Because I know most
sense.
Of you aren't buying one.
Yeah. I would almost, I don't even know if that phenomenon is necessarily unique to millennials. I think people wanting or overemphasizing short-term gains over long-term
sure.
growth is a
right.
problem throughout the stock market with every investor. So,
oh, it's more fun for sure.
Oh, it's way more fun.
Right.
And the millennials have been described as the instant gratification generation. So I would agree that we're probably into that a little bit more too. But as we know, that's not necessarily the best way to approach the stock markets.
So. Right. What about ETFs then? Because those you would think would be more stable. Do people trade those? And I'm not talking about like the triple longs, triple shorts, just like a basic ETF. Like, I own the S&P 500, SPY. Like, do they care?
Not really.
Okay.
It depends on the investor. I mean, if you're a college student and you really want to create a well-diversified portfolio, you'll buy ETFs and to get that diversification. But I've noticed that millennials are mostly bottom-up investors or stock pickers. They like this company. They want to buy it. They want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't necessarily a great thing, per se.
Sounds like they're emotional investors. Definitely. You know, they get a tie to the company emotional, and then want to own.
Emotional people overall. I mean, if if anything... Well, I think... For example, the public relations fallout that United Airlines is having right now, that is the type of thing that a millennial is going to care way more about and be way more personally attached, because that thing, that whole story broke on Twitter.
Right.
And that's how things go these days. The millennials on Twitter got Pepsi's Kendall Jenner commercial in less than a day.
That's true.
And that's the power that that emotion and that unified voice on these types of platforms can have. That being said, I think that there are certain people who are going to be fiscally minded always and want to, like, I was texting one of my best friends from high school, texted me the other day because he was on Yahoo Finance and saw my name pop up through one of the suggested articles for him, which I think if we can talk about that in a second, the Yahoo Finance phenomenon, that's a whole different point. Mm-hmm. But he texted me and was like, my finance professor suggested we go here. I saw you. What do you think about some options for me putting some of my savings in stocks and just kind of letting it ride for a few years? And I was like, oh, well, you should just buy an ETF that tracks the S&P 500 then if you're pretty confident about the overall market's ability to grow. And that was a revelation to him at the time. Like, it was not was not something that he had even considered doing.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, if you think the S&P 500 can grow 8-10% the next few years, then you should be solid. That's exactly what you wanted out of set it and forget it kind of investing. But yeah, it was interesting that it took him a few minutes of me helping out to get to that. Oh yeah, that is a pretty good idea.
It's cool that he was interested in that passive investing. That's not something I've seen from millennials.
Yeah, no, it was surprising to me that I had even gotten the question. So yeah.
You're usually working for a number of years before you decide, oh, I might want to do the passive kind of thing.
Right.
Especially you normally start out in like a 401k plan or something, and then you kind of see. You get, you know, you sign online and check your statement. And you're like, oh, that's actually doing something, or it's growing for, you know, my little bit I'm putting in every month or whatever. And then that gets you kind of into doing it more.
Yeah, I would say that as a whole, our generation feels underprepared for those types of things.
I agree.
I think one of the main complaints of our system of education is from my peers who go, gee, when did anyone teach us how to do taxes in high school? when did we go over 401ks in high school? Because now I'm in college and I'm a history major or whatever.
That's what I was.
And I didn't study finance at all. Yeah. And I have no idea about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I think if anything, those types of things bring anxiety to younger people because they're like, no one told me about this.
And they simply just don't understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you pick it up over time too.
Right.
As well,
sure.
So. Right.
Now let's get back to the Yahoo Finance or whatever. Mm-hmm. You were going to make some kind of point about that. Do you use Yahoo Finance?
I do use Yahoo Finance.
Because that's old.
It is.
Like 20, 21 years old or something now.
I do use Yahoo Finance. I mostly like the Wall Street Journal. So I get the journal to my door in my apartment every morning. But that's not something you really see anymore. When I see my friends.
No, not as often.
No, yeah. So when I see my friends looking at financial news, it's always on their phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And basically reading headlines at the most, I would say.
Yeah.
So is that why they're still on Yahoo Finance? Or is Yahoo Finance where you go to plug in the ticker and kind of see
exactly,
what's going on?
Exactly, right.
You still do.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it has more information about individual equities, I would say, rather than overall financial news.
Yeah, I have had two separate conversations about Yahoo Finance within the past week with friends of mine. One was my buddy texting me, hey, I saw you pop up. This is kind of crazy. Another one was, hey, I just saw your name on Yahoo Finance because I was told to go there. Like the professor, he's in college still and was doing an assignment for a finance class. And the professor said, go to Yahoo Finance, plug your ticker in, give me a up-to-date. It was like a current events, basically report project type of thing. So yeah, one of the interesting things, I think there's a lot of headline reading across all types of news with millennials. We don't have the patience for a 500-word article, which is problematic in and of itself. But when you looked at even the Verizon Yahoo deal and Yahoo was trying to shed its core assets, the whole search engine aspect of Yahoo was not really super valuable anymore. And then you also had all the craziness of the account hacks and whatnot. Right. But one of the things that you were talking about for sure had value and was something that someone would be interested in buying was the Yahoo Finance kind of brand.
Yeah.
In that, and one of the things that was talked about at the time of these deals and these offers coming out was that millennials love Yahoo Finance. That's one what I found to be 100% true. And if people are going to places for finance news, it's places where they can headline read like that. Mm-hmm. I would also say there's some interesting communities on Reddit in the kind of investing world where there's a lot of headline reading as well, a little bit more discussion. So yeah, we like those places that we can feel like we're consuming a lot at once.
In a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been really interesting. So we've concluded that millennials are buying stocks and they like to trade them. Not surprising. And they'll use Robinhood or those kind of apps that, you know, give free or very cheap trades. Mm-hmm. And they're not really interested in ETFs, but they probably will be later, the older millennials. Mm-hmm. And they like to buy stocks in things they use and like whatever they can hold in their hand or they have actual experience with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would add into that also more so than just things they use, things that they believe in. Going back to that kind of
like a word, social investing.
A very emotional generation.
Yeah. Right.
And that would make us more prone to something like maybe a Tesla where we're like, hey, electric cars are important. I care about the environment. I care about renewable energy. This is a company I believe in.
Right. Like social investing, avoiding sin stocks is definitely something you see millennials keep away from just because they do have that heart per se and those emotions in the mix of the market, which is something you traditionally you want to separate.
Okay. All right. Let me just go over some of the tickers we did talk about. Obviously, Tesla is TSLA. Facebook is FB. Alphabet/Google is GOOGL. Snapchat is still Snap. What else did we talk about? That was about it, the main ones.
I think so.
All right. So yeah, this has been interesting. I'm going to keep checking in on various aspects of what the millennials are doing because I do think we're learning a lot about that generation and like what you all are doing with finance and stocks. And since you are among the largest generations, obviously what you do with investing will impact the stock market going forward. So that's exciting though, that you enjoy it. Cause I know Generation X, we loved doing the trades too. Till it all went bust.
Don't underrate our power, I'll say too, cause you make a good point. We're a big generation.
You are.
We have a lot of influence and I think that
could be good for Yahoo Finance.
Yeah.
Now that definitely. I'm hearing this, that's good news for them. Anyone working over there, you heard it here first. Stick around because the millennials like you. Okay. So if you want to check out our other podcasts, you can do so on SoundCloud, of course, because they're still in business, and on iTunes. Yeah. They were going to. How much do you guys use SoundCloud? Do any of you?
Every single day of my
life. Yeah, you both SoundCloud, do. So this is what I don't get. Why were they going under? I'm surprised Facebook didn't buy them out.
Classic case of. Great idea. We'll figure out the money part of it
money.
Later.
Right.
And then they never figured out the money part of it.
So. I know. Well, if Facebook's listening, they should have just bought them. But they got $70 million in loans to keep going. So for now, SoundCloud's still out there. So you can check us out there. And be sure to check out our other millennial podcasts because we have done a couple in the past and they're always interesting. So for everyone here at Saks, I'll see you again next time.